save today, which is United States against Lawfrey. Mr. Price.
Your Honor, I may have pleased the Court. My name is Matthew Price on behalf of Appellant Roger Lawfrey. As a result of the Rule 403 violation in this case, there is a very real risk that Mr. Lawfrey was convicted not for the crime with which he was charged, but rather because the jury wanted to punish him for uncharged bad acts or for being a bad person. The District Court made two errors when it allowed the government to introduce highly inflammatory child pornography, hardcore child pornography, bearing no relationship to the charged conspiracy. One error was procedural and the other substantive, and each independently warrants reversal of the conviction. With respect to the procedural error, the District Court's approach was deficient in three respects. First, it failed even to look at the evidence before admitting it. Second, it failed to consider prejudice in any way. And third, it failed to explain why it thought the evidence had probative value that outweighed or that was not substantially outweighed by the risk of unfair prejudice.
So is it your position that actually Rule 403 simply cannot be implemented without the district court reviewing whatever the evidence may be, whether it's photographs or documents or, you know, some proffer of testimony or whatever it may be?
Well, in this case, the answer is not necessarily no. In this case, however, the government told the district court that it wished to admit this evidence precisely because of the much greater impact that showing videos to the jury would have than merely describing them or showing still photos. So it admitted the evidence precisely in order to have that impact on the jury. And in that kind of situation, we think it's incumbent on the district court to actually view the evidence before it decides to admit the evidence.
I thought one of your arguments, maybe this came out a little bit more in your reply brief, was that the court has an independent responsibility under 403, and it shouldn't just take one advocate's word for what the evidence might be, whether it's the government or the defense. I mean, nothing to pick on the government here, but.
Well, that's right. It's hard to understand how a court can really exercise its discretion carefully and thoughtfully without knowing precisely what it is that it's allowing into the trial. And here, that error was magnified. To the extent that the district court did rely on the government's account, the error of doing so was magnified by the fact that the government, one of the purposes the government sought to introduce the evidence for was an improper purpose, namely to show with the jury what kind of guy this was.
But you can use propensity evidence in this area. This is another one of these 414 cases.
Of course you can use propensity evidence, but I think it's important to distinguish between propensity evidence and evidence which simply attempts to cast a bad light on the defendant as an individual or as a person. Propensity evidence is evidence that says because defendant did act A, he's more likely to have done the charged act. But what the risk that was presented by the admission of this evidence is that the jury would say, we don't really care about the charged evidence. We don't like this defendant because the defendant possessed very, very graphic, disturbing, and upsetting hardcore child pornography, and the jury convicted him on that basis.
So what about, in this case, there is a limiting instruction given by the district court. Why doesn't that fix the problems that you're talking about?
Well, that limiting instruction was a boilerplate limiting instruction that was given amidst all the other instructions. In the Chisholka case, this court said that a boilerplate instruction of that kind is not adequate to cure any prejudice.
Was there a request to have the instruction given when the testimony was admitted?
There was no request to have an instruction either by the defendant or the government. Our position is that this evidence should not have come in the first place, and the prejudice could not have been cured by a limiting instruction. The highly graphic material here, which I would encourage the court to view, is extremely inflammatory, and we don't believe it should have come in at all. And this court's cases make clear that a district court needs to explicitly consider the possible prejudice that would result from admitting evidence, bad act evidence of this kind, and also to explain carefully the reasons for deciding that its probative value was worth the cost of its potential unfair prejudice. And I'd point this court to the cases of Chisholka, Beasley, and Macy. And further, the analysis given by the district court in this case was significantly more anemic than the analysis this court in Chisholka said was inadequate. And so we think the procedural error here is clear and warrants reversal. As to the substantive error, this evidence was really of minimal probative value. I would direct this court to the Supreme Court's reasoning in Old Chief, where the Supreme Court explained that one needs to assess the probative value of evidence in comparison to the other evidence the government had available to it to prove the point.
So I take it you've more or less conceded that if the government had taken what I'll call some of the, you're calling it lascivious exhibition stuff from the Baltimore House and introduced that, it would have perhaps been a way of filling out the gaps in its case. It's that they used the hardcore materials that were different from what he had put up in the cache.
Yes, with one qualification. I mean, I think that it would still err to allow any of that evidence in from the House because the government had available to it a lot of evidence from the cache itself. And we think that evidence alone was sufficient to do everything the government wanted to do.
But I thought he was arguing that the government didn't really show that he was responsible for putting anything in particular up on the cache. And if that's the case, then it seems to me, at least as to the exhibition photographs and other materials from the House, the government could have refuted such a claim by saying, you had all this stuff, you know.
But that's absolutely right, Your Honor, and it arguably would have been within the district court's discretion to allow that evidence in. But the key point is that's not what the government showed. The government showed evidence that was much more inflammatory, the only added value of which was prejudicial. There was no added probative value very minimal added probative value to allowing that hardcore evidence in. Now, with respect to harmless error, the kind of evidence that we're talking about in this case, bad act evidence, is evidence that is highly likely to lead a jury to convict on an improper basis. And so it's of the utmost importance that this court be certain that the jury's verdict was not influenced by that improper by the improperly admitted evidence. In this case, we do not think that the court can say that with the requisite certainty. The government's case was thin and circumstantial. The theory that it presented to the jury was that Mr. Lockery was a high-level and active figure in this conspiracy, yet it presented no evidence at all of showing his direct distribution or advertisement of child pornography. It attempts to cobble together its case by piecing together various actions it claims Mr. Lockery took as an administrator of this site. But in fact, many of those actions involved deleting files and links, and the jury could well have inferred that those weren't the kinds of acts that showed involvement in a conspiracy. And there were also a very small number of those acts. Only 1.2% of the actions taken for the original old cache bulletin board could have been attributed to Mr. Lockery, and only 8 of 1,100 actions with respect to the new cache could have been attributed to him. It's a jury question whether this thin evidence showed that Mr. Lockery entered the conspiracy with the specific intent to further the conspiracy's criminal objectives and whether he intended to join the conspiracy at all. And the jury might well have a reasonable doubt with respect to that issue. And we would further add that the correct standard of review here is whether the jury would have reached the same conclusion beyond a reasonable doubt. The government does not contest that this would have been constitutional error had the evidence been improperly admitted. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, that's fine. Ms. Waldron.
May it please the Court, I'm Wendy Waldron with the Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section of the Department of Justice for the United States.
So I want to discuss the Ninth Circuit's en banc decision in the United States against Curtin with you, because that's a case not unlike this, where there's a 403 objection. It's a child molestation case. And the Ninth Circuit very firmly, as I read it, says the district court cannot make this particular kind of 403 decision without some form of personal examination. Now, maybe the Ninth Circuit says you've got to look at every last thing. I don't know if that's it or whether a sampling technique would be enough or whether saying to the government, you know, give us your best 10 and I'll look at those. But I'm very troubled at the idea that the government can stroll in and say, trust us, Judge, you know, the probative value outweighs the prejudicial impact, and the judge it doesn't have any obligation to look at it. Nobody wants to look at this stuff, of course, but it's part of the job.
Yes, Your Honor, Curtin involved text stories, the contents of which surprised everybody involved.
But why does that matter? I know it was about stories, but this is about, and arguably this is even worse. Mm-hmm. This is videos, which are, and photographic, I'll just say, forget about the computer form or whatever. I don't see how a judge can intelligently come to a decision on a 403 balancing without having any personal idea what's on one side of the balance.
Your Honor, I think it matters for two reasons. One, the record is very clear in this case that the court, at the time it made its decision, correctly understood the contents of these materials,
the judge didn't.
Well, yeah, he says, I guess I am somewhat of a disadvantage not knowing exactly what items and depictions, if you will, are on the government's exhibits. That is not clear.
Yes.
And it's another situation where when he makes a statement like that, it should be na-na-na-na to the prosecutor. I need to then say, Judge, you know what? Here they are. We really ask the court to examine them. And if he says, oh, no, I don't think so, I trust you, you say, well, you know what, Judge, I think that could be error if you don't look at them. I mean, I think it would be I think a district judge would not back away from that if the government didn't.
Or the judge would say, just give me a few. You
right.
know, I don't want to look at hundreds, but give me a few so that I can see what kind of material this is, so that I can see how it pertains to this case. Is the probative value of this stuff the kind of thing that's going to outweigh the prejudicial impact? It gives the defense an opportunity to say this case isn't about that kind of thing. Indeed, the cash has rules that you can't even put this sort of stuff up on the cash. It's a procedure that I think is very difficult to defend.
Yes, Your Honor, but I would direct the court's attention to the fact that this statement, what are we talking about here? I don't know what these exhibits show, comes at toward the beginning of a long hearing in which the government specifically stated that the materials from the Baltimore home included hardcore child pornography.
That's different from the impact of looking at hardcore child pornography. You can say hardcore, and frankly, it could cover a range of things. And the judge isn't going to know where on that spectrum this stuff is without taking a look. And I was very disturbed, I'll mention in passing, at the government's offhand little reference to the idea that 403 applies in a relaxed fashion if it's a 414 case. That's certainly not what Rogers said. It's just that there's one reason why you don't reject the evidence. Propensity is fine under 414, but Rogers itself gives a number of examples of instances in which the prejudice would outweigh. It's not like the Rules Committee changed 403.
Yes, Your Honor, and I will come back to that, but I want to finish addressing, if I may, the court's concerns about the district court not personally viewing the evidence. We did cite in the record that there were extremely detailed descriptions of these images in testimony of government witnesses. This was Investigator Matt Kiley, before any child pornography from his home was ever published to the jury.
And so then the court knew what the agent's view of it was. But you still, that's what the court's job is to make that determination, to make that call.
Yes, Your Honor. But at that point, the court knew even which sexual acts were depicted and the approximate age of the victims in the pictures. So at that point, the court had an extremely detailed view that was uncontested at that point or now by any of the parties.
I would say a sanitized view, because without looking at it yourself, if some agent says, you know, it's a 5-year-old girl and XYZ acts of penetration or other forms of abuse are happening, of course you get some idea, but I think particularly with videos, it's all in the presentation. The prejudicial impact is part of how it's presented. You've probably gone to see movies that you thought were really boring, and then you went to see another movie that was a similar plot, and it was gripping. It's all in the presentation.
Yes, Your Honor. And about the presentation, the government played only very limited video excerpts. And there are only really three videos that are at issue here that depicted something other than lascivious exhibition. So that goes to the prejudice, which I will address. But
what was the possible relevance of that to the cash, other than that this guy is a gross person?
Your Honor, this evidence was highly relevant.
No, it's not. Aside from saying that in addition to dealing with things that are sort of softcore lascivious exhibition, he actually is really into the really gross stuff. He's not being prosecuted for that.
Your Honor, he was being prosecuted for conspiracy. We had a burden.
Conspiracy whose scope did not include this kind of material.
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, this was a conspiracy to distribute and advertise child pornography.
But the scope of this conspiracy was the cash, the old cash and the new cash, which had its rules about what was going to be in it.
Right. And the defendant, in his statement to law enforcement and in cross-examination of the government witnesses, suggested that his primary purpose on the cash was to play army games.
And all you had to do was introduce the exhibition stuff that you found in Baltimore, which I don't think we'd be having anything like this conversation about, A, because the judge probably would have looked at it, B, because it's clearly relevant to refute that argument of his I'm playing video games argument.
Your Honor, I would suggest that the more severe child pornography materials are actually more probative for two reasons. One, they specifically rebut defendant's statement that his only purpose on the cash was to find hardcore child pornography materials. And so they undercut that statement by defendant, which was introduced in the government's case. Second, they show a more deliberate...
I cut it since he deleted them when he found them. That wasn't the part... That wasn't, maybe he then took them to Baltimore or something, but I don't see why it has anything to do with the cash.
Well, that's what he said. He said his only purpose on the cash was not to collect child pornography, was not to participate in the advertising and distribution of child pornography, but to essentially police the cache and eliminate hardcore child pornography when he found it. The government was right, and the government was in.
What he had in Baltimore had nothing to do with what he did in the cache.
We don't believe that he did serve that function on the cache.
Yeah,
and
but you didn't have any evidence to substantiate it because the videos were in a totally different location, not a part of the cache. I mean, that's the connecting link that we're missing here.
Yes, Your Honor. What this shows is that from a period starting before he even joined the conspiracy in 2005, all the way up through 2008, he collected in a very deliberate manner contents at his home.
Why didn't you charge him for that? You could. I mean, the government's writ runs to Baltimore.
Well, we could have charged him separately with that.
I mean, I don't understand. If he needed to be charged for... I mean, I've seen plenty of cases where the government's prosecuted precisely this kind of thing, quite rightly.
But, Your Honor, that's I would suggest, not relevant to the question before us. If he had...
It's relevant to the question of what was the scope of the conspiracy you charged, what's the prejudice inside the case that you defined for yourself. We didn't define it. We didn't bring that case. That's up to the government. You did. And so now you need to be judged by the standards you established.
Yes, Your Honor. And the evidence that he had deliberately collected hardcore materials, in addition to more specifically rebutting part of his self-serving statement, also showed that he was very consciously involved in trading child pornography and not just there to look for adult child pornography or to play army games. And by analogy, Your Honor, if you had a case where the defendant's intent with respect to a 14-year-old victim was at issue, I would suggest that prior acts of molestation of a 12-year-old victim would be, in fact, more probative of defendant's intent than prior acts with regard to a 16-year-old victim, because it shows a deliberate targeting of children, a deliberate and unusual sexual interest, which this court in cases such as Siebold, in cases such as Julian, has emphasized is extremely probative. In Siebold, which was merely a 404B case, the court admitted prior molestation, which is much more prejudicial, if you will, hands-on molestation, of a victim in a trial for possession, transportation, and advertising child pornography.
Okay. We know Siebold. If you'd like to just wrap up, that would be...
Yes, Your Honor. The prejudice was further minimized by the limited use and specifically the limiting instruction, which was essentially a 404B instruction in this case. It was by far not the majority. It was an overwhelming minority of the evidence offered in this case.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Price? All right. Apparently no. Thank you very much for accepting the appointment. The court appreciates your efforts. And thank you, of course, to the government. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.